Welcome to Webcomics and Serial Storytelling here in TCAL. My name is Holly. I'll be your moderator for today. I think we'll start out with going down the row and having everybody introduce themselves and just giving a brief 1-2 sentence summary of their comic for people who may be unfamiliar.
I'm Apple Geeks and Johnny Wander. Apple Geeks is a comic kind of about college students. It started in 2003. And Johnny Wander is an autobiographical comic that alternates into fiction every once in a while. And we started that, I think, a year and a half ago. So.
Louder.
Oh. I'm Meredith Gran. I do Octopus Pie, which is an online comic that started in Spring 2007. It's largely character-driven, kind of a series of self-contained stories with an underlying continuity about two women who live together in Brooklyn, New York.
Hi, I'm Spike. I do this. Templar, Arizona. It is an extremely long-format, character-driven story about an Arizona in an alternate universe. It's currently running on I tell people it's about a 12-year story arc, and I am about 4 years in.
Damn.
Hi, my name is Tara Talon. I do a science fiction comic called Galaxian, which started in 1993 as a mini comic, and then about 1997 as a floppy comic series, and then 2006 became a webcomic.
My name is Cameron Stewart. I do a comic called Sin Titulo, which is part of the TX Comics collective. You can go to txcomics.com. And mine is a kind of a dark neo-noir, semi-autobiographical mystery story that's kind of inspired by David Lynch movies.
Hello there. My name is Ramon Perez. I do two web comics, Butternut Squash, which has been online since 2003. It's an autobio with a nice dose of fiction in there. Fun. And I also do Kookaburri, which is I kind of describe it as a contemporary kind of pop art, Alice in Wonderland, rabbit through the whole kind of story. Oh, sorry. Not enough coffee this morning. TXcomics.com, right there with him. I'm with him. There you
go. Okay, so I figured I'd start with sort of a topic that's kind of been in the buzz of webcomics consciousness lately, because there's been a couple of comics that have been running for a really long time, kind of since the birth, so to speak, of webcomics as a thing, webcomics as a defined thing, that have recently come to a close. And they've come to a close because the artists sort of felt like it wasn't sustainable for them anymore. How interested are you in the sustainability of your comic? Do you write your comic as a project, or do you write your comic as a product where you put your comic online with the intent that you will have an audience, that you will build an audience, that this will become a product that you're marketing, as opposed to something that you're just artistically driven to do?
Oh, okay. Well, speaking personally, the comic that I'm doing now, I hate telling people this because it sounds really cheesy, and when I hear people say this, alarm bells go off, but it's the comic I've been wanting to do since I was 12. And it's never really been an option to not do it. I've gone on month-long hiatuses. My update schedule's been really sporadic, but pages keep coming out, and they will keep coming out until it's done. So quitting isn't an option. But at the same time, it's really depressing, and sometimes I just, crawl under the bed. I'm like, oh, fuck me, what am I doing? Because 12 years is a long-ass time, and the internet is not really into long-format comics, because most, not saying all readers, but most, they click over, and if the first page doesn't immediately catch them, they're gone. And on my comic, when you're clicking in for the first time, you're on page 497 mid-conversation, and people are like, this isn't funny, and they're gone. So there's a much higher sort of hurdle of entry for comics, because you're automatic for comics that are long format, because you're automatically going to lose a bunch of people that came for a joke, it's not there, they're leaving. And then you're going to lose people, they're going to look at your archives, which are always getting freaking bigger, and it's like, I don't have time to invest to read 500 pages, those people are gone. And then people are going to read through the 500 pages, decide that they don't like it, and then those people are gone. And what's left is a tiny slice of people who read webcomics, but nurturing that tiny slice is the most important thing you can do if you're a long format webcomic creator, because those are the people that are going to be crazy dedicated and come to cons and ask for hugs and bake you Rice Krispie treats and drop $250 in your Amazon wish list, okay?
I would say that the two are not mutually exclusive. You can make a product and a project, and I think it just involves a little bit of planning. For Spike, she wanted to do this story, so that's what she set out to do. For me, I had some characters in my head. I didn't want to get into a super involved story because I knew that ultimately I would feel burdened by the task of writing an extremely complicated story. So when I was planning to make this webcomic, I decided early on that I was going to keep the stories as simple as possible, whereas there would be some continuity, it would always be really simple things like where are the characters working, who are they dating, things that you can kind of jump in and not really care if you've missed the part before that. And ideally, I mean, at the end of any story, things should revert to the way they were, to the point where if the characters died at the end of the story, they can come back with no explanation at the beginning of the next one.
Works for South Park.
I started my comic as an exercise, but I think all of us at TX did as an exercise for ourselves in broad. We were all professional mainstream comics artists. Like, I make my career doing, you know, mainstream superhero comics and Batman and stuff. And I was not satisfied with that being the totality of my career, and so I wanted to, you know, practice writing because I hadn't written a lot of stuff, and I wanted to be known as equally as a writer, as an illustrator. And so I started this project for that goal, for like writing a story that was intended to satisfy me more than anybody else, and just kind of broaden my skill set and hopefully be good. And then in the process of working on it, it's starting to come together, and it's becoming this thing that now I know is a product, and I know that people are very eager to, like, I get questions all the time about when they can buy it. And but I have mine set. I certainly don't have any long, like, I'm not going to go for 12 years, certainly. I mean, mine will only run probably for...
Well, I'm an idiot.
Well, I wasn't going to say it. So it was going to go for probably another year at the most, and then it's going to be finished, and then I plan to move on to the next thing. I want to do long-form storytelling in that I don't want to do, you know, just get weekly gag strips. But I want to do longer stories, but I don't want to do stories that last for a decade. I want to do, you know, a story that will run only as long as it needs to, and then I can go on to the next one.
Well, for me, for sustainability, I think that really comes from the creator. And I'm kind of like Spike here in that I also started my comic literally when I was 12 and discovered that it's something I just have to do. And I even tried stopping. I tried stopping when my kids were born, and I actually stopped for 6 years, but discovered I can't keep... I gotta go back. So it's always going to be something that I do. But for attracting new readers when you're doing a long-form story, it's a lot of the same challenges that we had when we were doing print. Is if you're going to the comic shop and seeing issue number 37, and I don't want to start in the middle, where's issue 1? And in a comic shop, that was even harder, because half the time they don't have the back issues in stock.
Yeah.
Whereas online, it's easy to click first and start from the beginning if you're willing to invest the time.
Yeah. But that's one of the weird paradoxes. The internet is, like, really good if you're doing a long format comic, in the sense that, you know, Volume 1, per se, will never go out of print. It'll always be there. If someone wants to jump in, that's always an opportunity. But at the same time, the majority of webcomic readers online, it's like they're just not interested. Most people, when they think of webcomic, they think of something that has a punchline. And while long-format comics can have every page end in a punchline, mine don't. A lot that I do read don't, because they're more focused on getting the story out than trying to end each page as punchy as possible. And it can be tough.
I think as far as sustainability goes, I agree with Meredith. I think it's smart to do it, to think of it both as a project and a product. The first comic I did, Applegeek, started off as a gag a day back in 2003 when we were in college, and then we sort of made a transition into storylines when that got a little boring for us. And as far as my personal experience goes, we actually found that we lost a lot of readership when we did that. I think it's smart that if you're going to do a comic that is a storyline-based comic, just start it that way, because then the readers know what they're in for. That's just my personal
opinion. Yeah, I think we agree with that, true. Too, because Butternut started off as a gag idea, then we started involving stories and stories, and then it actually got boring for us. We're trying to keep track of the stuff, and we're actually going to be reverting back to just Gag a Day. Like, I got my storyline one, and then I got the Gag a Day one. And,
That's slowly what we've been cycling back into, but it's tough because now we have this contingent of leadership who kind of wants to know what the story's going. But
it was all a dream.
Well, that's really funny because that's the next thing I was going to bring up. Like, how tempted are you? Like, have you ever painted yourself into a corner story-wise? Have you ever been tempted? Yeah, and have you ever been tempted? Because the thing about the internet is that, like, putting things online that you don't have necessarily with a print comic. Like, when you have a print comic, you're working really far in advance. You're submitting it to the newspaper or wherever, you know, is publishing your comic. And there's no take-backs. Like, once you've submitted that, that's it. You put it out there, it's on paper, it's out there. But with the internet, you can go and, like, put up your comic, and then 6 hours later be like, oh, God, no, that was so stupid. Take it down, redo it, put it back up, and hope nobody noticed.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, how tempted are you to just do that, just to be like, and, you know, and then it was all a dream, or, and, you know, and then the world blew up, and guess what, like, you know, now we get to start fresh.
I don't do that. I actually find that part of the creative challenge of it. And in a way, it's my story is, you know, I'll let whoever's a regular reader of it, I'll let you in on a bit of a secret, which is that it is half plotted in advance and half made up as I go. And it's
don't tell them.
No, I know. No, I mean, but in that, like, it's not entirely made up as I go. But I mean, a lot of it is I'll have an idea in the shower that morning for something that I can, you know, do. And then you can, you know, do that. But and yeah, I paint myself into corners all the time. But I kind of like that because then it forces me to be creative.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, like I've locked myself in a room and I'm challenging myself to get out of it.
Yeah.
You know, and hopefully not. I can get away with a certain amount of you know, supernatural stuff or metaphysical stuff or whatever, because mine's not strictly, you know, based in like it's reality, but there's elements of you know, non-reality to it, so I can get away with certain things like that. But I don't want to. I would rather, you know, kind of like, it's like fighting with myself, you know, and like, oh yeah, you think you've beaten me? You know, and, you know, and then figure out a way to get out of whatever trap I've laid for myself. You know, so.
To be as pretentious as humanly possible. At one point, Picasso said, the best way to sort of participate in the creative process is to have an idea, but for it to be a vague idea. And to this day, 500 pages in, Templar is still a vague idea. I have a really good idea of where it's going, but how it's going to get there is my day-to-day problem. Because every situation, it's like I don't actually have a script. All the dialogue is made up on the fly. And if you look very carefully, you can tell. And my script is a text file where it has things separated by dashes going, in this scene, Bill needs to find out his wife is cheating on him and then throw a complete hissy fit and stomp out the door. And this scene needs to last 10 pages, and I'm going to fill 10 pages describing that and not actually have the words until everything is penciled and ready to go. And that's why it's imperative for me when I put out the print editions to actually go back and read the dialogue and wonder what the hell I was thinking and rewrite everything, because sometimes shit don't make sense. And I consider the print editions kind of like the master editions, whereas the webcomic is almost like a dry run.
Yeah, I've been kind of working the same way. I went in with Kookaburra as a vague idea.
Yeah.
And as the story developed and the characters developed, they kind of began to write the story. And they took you places you weren't expecting. And then suddenly you're reading, you're like, oh, shit, there's a lot of loopholes. There's a lot of big plot holes in the story. So I've actually gone back 40 pages ago, changed the line of dialogue to better suit a situation. No, it's not cheating.
You'll get caught, but, though. You'll
George
get caught.
George Lucas-ing it.
There's nothing wrong with that. See, that man lay awake in bed at night for 30 years going, there need to be 4 more stormtroopers in that scene.
But yeah, like I think for me, like certain people are on the web and that's their final edition. But when I go to print, I'll be re-editing, adding pages in, because the pacing online is also very different than the pacing in print. Mm-hmm. And I find the staccato of web updates. I update 2 pages a week, so there's a cliffhanger every 2 pages to keep the reader coming back. You read that online, it's great. But if you read that, if you actually sit down, you're like, whoa, this is just go, go, go. You need to like kind of break it up a little bit. So add in like 3 or 4 pages in the sequence, or like, you know, move things around later on. So
I think Miller did that with SimCity and 300 too, like in print comics.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Another really good thing about updating online and like having kind of, you know, 2-3 pages up a week is there are times I go through the comments and people will bring stuff up that I didn't think of. Like, oh wow, this whole time, wait, is his apartment on fire this whole time? I'm like, oh shit. Next page, I need to address that. I'm like, no, I have no idea what you're talking about. I had that scene planned for the whole chapter. I'm a genius.
Or you forget the establishing shot, like 20 pages.
Where are we?
You know, I've actually had more readers figure out the next page, and I'm like, crap, they want... Fuck, I gotta
one. Next page,
like, all night, and like, and then like you put up a page, and like, you didn't see that coming. I'm like, I know.
I'm just that good.
Well, that's one thing I was gonna ask is how, you know, you all have dedicated audiences who are really, really involved in the story, and the other thing about putting your comics online is there is an immediacy in response that print comics don't have. You can put something up and within 5 minutes you're getting an email, you're getting a tweet, you're getting all this, like, you know, visceral, like, people knee-jerk response to what's happening to the characters. And do you ever, you know, and of course people will probably send you ideas about how things should go and who should get together.
Stop sending those.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. Like, how does that influence you at all? Like, and has it ever influenced you in the opposite way, where they're like, when are they going to make out? When are they going to make out? And you're like, you know what? She's gay. They're gay. Like, does that ever come into it for you?
Well, I've done it in 2 different ways. I used to do it the 3 times a week where that would happen, and every night before I posted an update, I would go through my little dance of anxiety where I mentally mapped every single possible response I could get, and I was still surprised. And I'd go to bed anxious just thinking about what people are going to be saying in the morning. And I changed my format for many reasons, but one of them was that I was tired of feeling that anxiety mid-story. So I changed it so that I would actually write out an entire story in advance, draw the entire thing, and not update the website at all until the story was finished, and then I would post the entire thing. So that night of anxiety I had 3 times a week. Now I have it like once a month or every other month, and it's 30 times as bad. So like the day I post it, I'm really, really scared. But at the same time, once it goes up, I feel a great relief that nobody can change anything about this. They're gonna react to it. They're gonna react to 2 months of work in 5 minutes. But whatever they say, the story is done. So, I mean, I've dealt with both. They're both very much anxiety-inducing. I think I like it this way a little bit better, though.
I actually really like the commentary, the feedback on the page-by-page basis, because it's actually helped me see some of the characters that I write and draw in a completely different way.
Yeah.
Like, I'll make this completely odious, like, perfect example, completely odious little character who is a cult member who is intensely jealous of his retarded older brother. And, someone wrote this like incredibly long, impassioned plea for everyone in the comments section to get on his side on one of the recently updated pages. Well, they're all like, you know, I feel sorry for Marcus, and this is why. And I was reading it going, well, shit, now I feel sorry for him too. And that's actually going to affect the way I write him in the future, where it's like he's going to move from being this like cardboard bastard archetype who's just there to be annoying to being sort of a lot more three-dimensional, where you kind of see why he hates his retarded brother and why he hates his cult leader mom and why he hates this whole town and everybody in it. And that makes the story better. So I know it's like there is a certain level of anxiety how people are going to react whenever a page goes up, but at the same time, there's a reward to it.
Yeah. I think there's also, for me, there's the expectation, because as readers get involved in your characters and their passion for these characters grows and grows, and You begin to wonder, am I going to fulfill their expectations of where this story's going? Like, you're building it up so big, and you're like, and then you're reading their interpretations, and you're reading their comments, and you're like, oh, that's a good idea. Oh, that's a good idea, too. Oh, I never thought of that.
Read, comment, take notes. You know? I always just going to do it this way.
You know, but then you're like, what? Is my idea going to, like, actually, you know, bring to the table, fulfill their expectations of the story? And that's kind of like the biggest fear sometimes.
It's kind of a shame when you have to second guess yourself. Like,
yeah.
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 I've noticed the biggest thing is I've noticed sometimes character problems or deficiencies or whatever. People say that they feel like a character's motivation is a bit unclear, which then makes me think about it and think like, oh, I should make it a little more explicit. Or there's a really interesting thing. What the character in my comic that I think is the most reasonable and sympathetic, a lot of readers hate her and think she's a bitch. And I get that all the time. I get comments that go like, she's a bitch. Evil eyes. And that really surprised me. And you know, and it's just interesting to see how things are perceived. Now they're commenting on something that's unfinished too, which I think is important to take note of. And the other thing is I never feel compelled to alter what I'm doing, because most of what I do is based on instinct and what feels right to me, and I will never change anything based on what the readers say or want or whatever, because ultimately I'm doing this story for myself, and if you like it, then great, but I'm not doing it for you know, to please people or to pander, you know, so I stick true to myself, and if people dig it, then great.
I should note that, yeah, I'm not going to... I mean, the storyline will not experience any significant changes just because you want X to bone Y or you think this should work out that way. It's like, I appreciate the input, and it does help me, like, have some insight into what people are feeling when they read the comic. But as to, like, a fundamental change in plot, that would never happen. And it's never going to. Don't even hope for it. Sorry.
Because the first comic I did... Sort of single out a particular demographic. I got pretty thick skin pretty early on as far as comments on the internet go regarding whether you're doing something right or wrong, but I would definitely say that getting a fan reaction at all, or seeing, you know, whether people are into it, or whether they're into it enough to criticize it, that does get me excited and does get me motivated to work on this.
I think part of the appeal of webcomics for a reader is being able to see the process of creation. So watching the new page go up week after week, or, you know, day after day, however often you're able to do it, is really neat. You know, it's nice to be able to read the whole thing at once, but to see the process, and even to be able to talk to the creator and give them your feedback is cool. That's something we couldn't do when we were doing the floppy comics.
Yeah.
So it's something I certainly want to keep, and I treasure every comment that I get.
Yeah. The worst possible comment is not a criticism. The worst possible comment is no comment, because that means that you've made someone feel absolutely nothing.
In the realm of long-term comics, because there's no fear of cancellation, you know, hanging over your head. There's no editor's never going to call you and be like, "Oh, you're losing papers. Like, you know, we have to replace you with Ziggy or whatever." because theoretically, your canvas is infinite. You could do this forever. Do you see yourself? I mean, and maybe not so much in the case of Spike, who already has like this whole 12-year plan. But do you see yourself at some point aging the characters? You know, a print example is Lynn Johnson's For Better or For Worse. She started out writing about a young family, and she did that for years and years and years, and then she started aging the characters. And it went from being this sort of gag-a-day thing about a young family into teenagers with teenage problems, and then they grew up and they got married, and then there were divorces, and then there were... And it ended up being the story of an adult family and their challenges as adults. Do you ever see yourself, like, you know, for example, Meredith, like, do what happens? Like, does what, you know, do you see yourself, you've got these 20-somethings, do you see yourself aging them 10 years, and then, you know, then Eve gets married, and Hannah does this, and, you know, set up a thing?
Well, I've been asked that a lot, like, are the characters ever going to get married or move away from each other? And I feel like the attitude of the comic is largely based around the idea that these people haven't figured their lives out yet. And I don't think I ever want to show them growing older. And I feel like if I ever had the desire to write the story that way, then it would probably be time to end the comic, because that's not really what it's about for me.
Yeah, speaking for Templar, the main character is on the cover of book 1. He's exactly 21 years old, and he's been 21 years old since I was about 13 or 14. So it's been this interesting experience having this one character for this very long period of time where he started out seeming impossibly mature and then became me, and now he's a dumbass kid from where I sit. So they'll never age. Frankly, as long as this idiotic comic I'm doing is planned to be, it'll be about a year in real time because I don't know what I'm doing. But yeah, if I ever did another comic, that would actually be a really interesting experiment. Like, kind of making it go. I'm never investing this kind of time in a comic ever again, but it'd be an interesting. How about one of you do it? Someone, like, do a comic for 30 years and have someone go from 20 to, like, 50.
I'd do it just hoping that the characters would get old and I would stay forever young.
Like a Dorian Gray. Yeah.
Yeah. My first reaction to the question was, well, of course the characters are going to get old. That's the point of a long-form story, that you want to see progress, you want to see the character grow and develop. But then I thought and I realized, wait a minute, I've been doing this for how many years now, and now they're still the same age. Theoretically, they will get older.
I think that is really just dependent on the type of story that's being told. And if it's appropriate to have your characters age and develop and change as people do, then do it. Another, you know, I don't think it's appropriate for my story, so I'm probably wrong.
Yeah. Oh, for, like, my character, it's I see mine as a 600-page story, and there'll be a definite character arc where she, you know, experiences certain things and, you know, changes from one phase of her life into another. But in the great scheme of things, it might be a year in her life, you know, so that she's not going to age at all. And I don't think it'd be interesting to do a story like that. But yeah, like Cameron said, it's dependent on the story. The ones I've initiated on the web and any other ideas I have are mostly like movies. They usually take place with a short frame of time. You know, you don't, unless you're doing like specifically something about aging or something like that.
Yeah, it can lend itself to.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I completely lost my train.
Not
there. Do you ever have a hard time? This goes back to audience reaction. Do you ever have a hard time introducing new characters into your set story? It seems like a lot of comics will start with a really core cast. It's sort of like to use a TV analogy, Friends. You know, it started out about five people, and for a few seasons it was about five people, and then they started expanding the cast, and you didn't really care about the other people that in the cast, and like, or you know, when TV shows, and then they're like, and then they had a baby, like you don't care about the baby, and you want it to go back to what it was. It was like, no, I liked it when they were just hanging around this coffee house. Do you have that trouble? Like, do you want to expand your cast, and do you find that either you expand your cast and something doesn't click, or that your audience hates the new character, or that you introduce a new character. Here's another example, full of examples today. Is questionable content. Jeff introduced the character of Hannelore, and she took over the whole comic. Mm-hmm. She's now the most popular character, and he had no idea. He just wanted to write this quirky, fun thing, and now, all of a sudden, nobody wants anything except for stuff about Hannelore.
Yeah, I can sympathize with that to a much smaller degree. This character, she's actually inspired by a drag queen. I don't know how many of you guys watch John Waters movies, but there is a person in it named Divine, and she was best known for actually eating dog shit on camera in Pink Flamingos, which is kind of the seed of this character. At the very heart of this character is a drag queen eating dog shit. And she has to be used carefully because any scene she's in, she is automatically taking over. And the one page that I have linked more than any other, like I find links to it tracking back on Google, is where she's waving a dildo around and screaming, "Let the cock of science fuck you." And it's like, no one's reading the comic, they're just linking to "Let the cock of science fuck you" over and over and over. And when I saw that, I was like, I have to be a little more careful, because this is meant to be almost a Simpsons-style ensemble cast where everyone gets their own bit of time. And while if I wanted to make actual money as opposed to cartoonist money, I'd probably just start a comic entirely about her where her boobs fell out a lot. But I don't care about money enough, which is my main failing.
For me, I think I was able to introduce new characters and have people care until about 3 years in, And then after that, people really wanted to hear about the core cast. And I don't know what everyone else's experiences are with that, but I'm actually very curious to hear.
It's interesting with the two different comics I do with Butternut. I think it's fun because it's funny because it started off based on myself, my friend Rob, and my friend Vince, and it was just basically taking our lives and the stupid things that happened and kind of, you know, transposing them to a story online. And then as my friends grew, like my circle of friends grew in the city, people would be like, when am I going to be in the comic? I've known you longer than Jill, and Jill's in the comic.
I have never been in your comic.
Yeah, exactly.
I've been 7 years.
So I started adding some of these friends in, and then like I was like, well, it began to water down the cast, and I was just like, it came to the point where I was losing track of who was doing what in the story, and I was like, I kind of just want to kill them all off. Then they'll all take it personally, probably. They'll be like, why'd you kill me off? Did we have a fight or something? So, you know, we're hopefully taking care of that in a certain way. But and then on the flip side, I want to return back to, like you were saying, return back to the main characters, because I think those are the characters that brought people in originally. They don't care about the baby or the girlfriend or the guy down the neurotic guy down the street, or at least maybe keep those characters, but they're like one-offs. They show up like once in the blue moon for a punchline, they leave, kind of thing. And with Kookaburra, I do the opposite, where I'm just throwing in characters left, right, and center because it's just visual fun and it's just like fodder. And you know, if they last for a little bit, like I've forgotten about characters. I'm like, oh crap, those are the guys. They haven't appeared in like 50 pages. Like, I gotta draw those guys. So you know, it's dangerous, but with that's a little bit more fun because like it's a visual play and people like the different visual characters and stuff like that. So, but at the same time, also, I'm gonna stop rambling in a second. But too many characters, you're gonna water them all down, and they're not gonna have any personality at the same time. So you have to be careful. You know, keep your characters rich and interesting. Don't like put like 50 characters in and they're like just cardboard cutouts of like or, you know, templates or something.
I introduce new characters a lot of the time just for variety for me drawing. Like when you draw the same, I have a central figure in the story who is in on every single page and in pretty much every panel. And yeah, I mean it kind of gets a little dull drawing the same guy. So I sometimes, but the other reason for me introducing new characters is, you know, my story is a thriller suspense thing, and new characters provide new obstacles and new, you know, suspenseful kind of things, and open up new narrative avenues sometimes, which can be interesting. But I try and introduce them in a way that feels very natural and not have you know, not in a very clumsy, you know, expository way, kind of like I just try and make them feel like they've always been there, but just haven't shown up yet, you know. And that's the trick, I think, so that it's not immediately obvious that you just bring it in to just kind of draw it out for another few pages or another, you know, 20 pages.
Yeah, I find it pretty easy to introduce new characters, and I try to do it as organically as possible, like Cameron and Ramon are saying, that, you know, in real life, you're introduced to new characters all the time. And in my comic, I definitely introduce characters mostly by having a bunch of people go out together, and somebody new just happens to be there, and they're introduced to the characters as they're being introduced to us, and they don't necessarily end up taking a major role in the comic, but it seems completely logical that if you go out with your friends and your social circle expands, you're going to meet new people. So my comic started out with 3 core characters, and it's grown to a pretty big cast just because their social circles have started to merge and they all see each other and they all meet new people.
Yeah, I have the ensemble cast thing going on too, and I kind of almost compulsively introduce characters to the point where I have gotten emails like, is this going somewhere? Because you just seem to be rambling. But what I try to do is keep everyone sort of, they get equal time, and while I've noticed that sort of almost cheerleading sections develop, like, okay, we're going to spend 20 pages on the codependent homeless couple, and then that's over, and then everyone's like, yay, Reagan! And then Reagan gets 10 pages, that's the transvestite. No, not the based on the transvestite. And then she gets 20 pages, and then the homeless people come back, yay, homeless people! And so, I mean, I get emails saying I hate these characters, next email saying I love these characters, and I ignore all of you, no matter what you say. And the characters being introduced, I've actually made like blog posts and Twitter posts about it. Just trust me on this one. They're there for a reason. I'm not just wandering around.
I also have a huge cast. And I tend to think that if characters come on that I'm introducing new characters and people find them boring, that's kind of my fault. I've done something wrong. Mm-hmm. So I try to make them interesting from the start. I've got lots of characters who are still waiting in the wings, and eventually they will come on board, and there is a plan, and they are there for purpose.
Yeah.
So I hope that with the huge cast that I've got, they're all interesting in some way. And eventually I will get back to your favorite, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's worth mentioning that on the internet, of course, with no editorial, you know, sort of direction, it cuts both ways. There are a lot of long format comics out there where the people don't know what they're doing, and they are just sort of rambling, and they don't quite know where anything is going. So I think part of the reluctance to invest on a lot of the readership's behalf is they've tried long format before, and it just kind of sputters out like a Model T, or the person decides this sucks, reboot, and they completely restart, which is always a bad idea, by the way. And they are not sure if you're a flake or if you're actually in it for the long haul or if you know what you're doing and where this is going. And I have to remember sometimes to, like, not take this personally, because I'm out there with the guy on Comic Genesis who's doing his furry Star Trek fan fiction about how all the Romulans totally dig his insert Fox character, and it's going to ramble to an end after two pages and then come back completely rebooted. And
man, I'm really hooked on that right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I know. That's my favorite one. I really like Yif City PI, Psychic Investigator.
Can I just add that I have rebooted three times?
Don't do that. Let me tell you a story real quick. Sorry, real quick, I swear to God. Okay, there's this woman named Colleen Duran, great cartoonist, awesome lady. She does a lot of mainstream work. She's easy to find. But she has a comic called A Distant Soil. A Distant Soil has been restarted 5 times now. And there's nothing that needs to be restarted 5 times. People, it's like, look at your first page on your archives. Yes, you want to slit your wrists, but people will be so much more into you if you ignore your shitty first 100 pages and crank out 100 new pages and go back and redraw stuff.
It feels like a lack of confidence. Oh. In the, sorry, I don't mean that as criticism of you, but I mean, but
no, it's okay, criticism. Like,
no, I mean,
that's my fetish.
No, I kind of agree. In constantly restarting, going, oh, I'm going to go back and do it again. Like, it just kind of feels like that. It's like, yeah, like just. With it.
Yeah.
So if you want to know, it was a format change.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. When I did reboot, I started with the mini comics, and I had to do them as issues instead of page by page. So the mini comics were 14 pages, and then when I switched to the floppies, that was 22 pages. So I had to make them 22 pages. You can't just add on to a chapter, like it doesn't work. And then when I went to the web, I didn't really have to reboot. I just didn't know that at the time. So that's my excuse.
So I figure at this point we can take some questions if anybody has. You have something to say.
What are some of the best ways you found to attract new readers?
I'm sorry?
He said, what are some of the best ways you found to attract new readers?
Do your best work.
Yeah.
As regular an update schedule as possible. I know I should take my own advice here. My update schedule is insane and erratic. Word of mouth is actually incredibly valuable. And people are going to disagree with me on this, but if you are really, you know, sort of aggressive about review copies, and if you're aggressive about Project Wonderful, maybe out of the 10,000 views you'll attract, you'll get 10 people who stay. But the thing is, I'm doing long format, and those 10 people who stay are super valuable.
I think with long format stories, what I've begun to notice is the more story pages you have up there. I know you were saying earlier it's daunting.
Yeah.
People come to their archive of like 400 pages, but if you break them up into chapters or something, it's a little bit less overwhelming for new readers. But when you have more substance up there, people have more to invest in when they show up, and they get more attached to the characters. So if you have like 10 pages up, you're not going to get 10,000 readers.
I try my hardest to make it as easy to get into as possible when you come to the site, TemplarAZ.com. When you come to the site, there's a cast page that has casts that link to, that has all the cast broken up into main character, supporting cast, links to their first appearance, short description. Then there's a chapter guide broken down what happens in this chapter, intermission guide, what happens in this intermission, so that if you want to be incredibly lazy and just read the bios and just read the chapter guide and then just jump in on the first page, bad idea, but conceivable. Because it's all about making it at like the level of entry as low as possible.
I would agree that the story guide is really important. I think one of the most important things I've done to allow people to get into the comic, it was easy at first, now it's almost 400 pages, is to write a comprehensive story guide that describes what happens in every chapter, and to constantly remind people that if they just got started, they don't have to read all of this, they can just pick a story. Most of the characters involved will be reintroduced, so they won't be out of the loop. And if you just do a little bit of reading or read some summaries, you can get started right away.
Yeah.
I was going to, not specifically with story guides or anything like that, but I just, the nature of the internet means that things can be shared really easily, and so word of mouth travels really fast, more so than if it was a print book or whatever. And I found a lot of success just with Facebook and Twitter. I think this is what the previous
Twitter,
panel was
yeah.
about.
Yeah.
Twitter has been huge for me in terms of getting new readers, because I used to, whenever I put up a new page, I'd say, the new page is up, and I thought it was a bit bold and a bit cheeky to actually just kind of say, hey, retweet this if you want. But people start doing it, and it just kind of increases exponentially, when I started doing that, my reader numbers climbed considerably.
Yeah, there's kind of two problems. The first one is getting the readers to your site in the first place, just to have the first look, and the second problem is getting them to stay. So for the second part of the problem, some of the things that I do to keep the readers there is I have a couple of short stories that go along with my characters, so I tell new readers that if you want sort of a no-commitment story where you can read maybe 8 pages, get to the end, and you're done, you're not left on a cliffhanger, start here. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I do is with each new page, I try to make it a little more accessible by putting in the comments section at the bottom of the page little links saying to understand why this character is so upset, go read this scene over here. And actually, I do find that when I take the time to do that kind of thing, that those go up, so I can see the reaction from the readers that they're following these links and mm-hmm. hopefully are following the story a little better.
When you're doing long format, I'm a big believer that it's not going to be the quantity of readers you have, it's the quality of the readers you have, because the people who are willing to sit down and read your colossal archives and still care and then be there when it updates, those people are going to just be completely in it for the long haul because they are invested in the story. It's like, I love Gun Show. I love Casey Green's comics. But when you hear him talk about his readership, it's kind of hilarious because he's like, fucking 4chan. Because it's like people...
Not readership, one person.
One guy. One guy on 4chan linking, excuse me. And, that's 60,000 hits and that's rad. And believe me, I wish I had 60,000 hits a day. But they click over and then they're gone. They like Gun Show, but they're not invested in Gun Show.
Yeah.
People who read Templar are invested in Templar. I get multi-paragraph emails that are simultaneously, tell me what happens. No, don't tell me. Don't tell me. Don't tell me. How about, no, you know what? Never mind. Ignore all of this. Bye. Thank you. And that is incredibly valvable to get that kind of, when it resonates with someone like that, then you have a fan for life, and that's awesome.
I've actually also found that in conjunction with everything you guys are saying, doing a lot of shows helps if you want to play
yourself. Yeah,
definitely. I think we did 16 in 1 year. I don't know what you guys' schedules are like, but that year we got one of our biggest bumps that I had ever seen, and so doing shows definitely helps. And basically, we go and we sell, but at the same time, we just leave a bunch of business cards along the front, and people pick them up, people tell their friends, and it worked out.
Man, I saw you more than my in-town friends that year.
Self-promotion is really important for any kind of artist, regardless of any kind of comic you do. And when I mean self-promotion, I don't mean running up and down the aisles like an obnoxious asshole waving your comic over your head. I mean, like...
Yeah, we're moan.
But, like, I mean, showing up, being seen, producing, doing the work, being friendly... underlined.
Be as friendly as you possibly can.
Yeah, because like everyone in comics that I've met has been completely approachable because we're all dorks. We are making comic books for a living, for God's sake. There are no cool people here. And I mean, when you make friends, you're already like halfway there, seriously. Because when my friend updates a comic, I link to it. When my friend does something funny, I go on Twitter and go check this shit out. He's hilarious. And that's really valuable because when people are following you on Twitter, it's probably because they kind of trust what you said. And so I found a comic recently. Here, I'll do it right now. There's this comic called Love Me Nice. Okay? Yeah. Isn't it great?
It's nice art.
I fucking love Me Nice. It's great. And every once in a while, I'll just gush about it, and I'll link it on Twitter. And it means, like, maybe an extra 1,000 hits for the author. And it's because she's a decent human being, and I'm a decent human being. So let's all be decent, okay?
Yeah, people make a lot out of how there's no web comics community, but that's not true at all. Like, I think that there are comics out there that would have no readers if those artists did not make friends at shows.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely true. Definitely. I mean, you have to have the quality to back it up. But, do you also find
I'm interested in that. Who says there's no web comics community?
Mostly print people.
The people who don't actually believe we make a living giving stuff away for free, those people.
Yeah, and people, and they think that it's like this weird, like people who make web comics are these weird insular, like, you know, and some of them are.
I admit I'm probably the newest person here to web comics. Like this is new for me.
We'll catch you up on the drama.
In seeing all the people that do webcomics, it looks to me like those are extremely tightly knit. Even though they're separate by location, through the internet, it seems like there's actually a really strong, very tightly knit, very, very, you know, close webcomics.
Oh, absolutely. I think it from the outside, it just doesn't seem right. Like, it seems very scattered.
Right.
Yeah.
So, do you find that it's a natural progression now? When you have a webcomic, you make a book.
Yeah.
Like, that's just what happens.
Yeah.
Do you find that also helps you to get new readers? Like, when you go to shows and you have these books and people wander around, they're like, oh, I've never seen this before. You're like, well, it's all online. But also, here, boom, it's $10, you can buy this book. And then,
for my spiel is when people come by the table, I give them the spiel. And if they give me one or two lines where it's all like, well, I'm just walking around, is line one. Or, I don't have any money, which is line two. I'm like, well, here's a postcard. You don't have any money? You like free? Here's free. Yeah. And I've given those out and come back to the same con the next year and had people literally run up to my table and buy one of everything and go, you gave me a postcard last year. I love your comic. It's so awesome. I didn't realize how good it was last year. You're so cool. And I bask. But, yeah.
I find that both at conventions and online, I get a lot of people buying my books who admit to me that they've never read it before, but that they've heard good things about it, and they'd actually prefer to read it in a book. And I'd actually prefer to read it in a book because it's kind of hard for me to read a long-form webcomic online. I'll be the first to admit that.
Definitely.
And I buy a lot of my peers' books because I just can't read them online. I don't have the attention span for it. So I think that, you know, putting your long-form story in a book is one of the best things you can do. I make a large majority of my earnings, and this has been my job for about 2 years. I make almost all of it from selling books.
90% from books for me. It's like there's some ad revenue, there's some like shirt revenue, there's some miscellaneous revenue, but 90% is definitely books. If you have a long format comic, you've got enough for a collection, merchandise that shit as quick as you can. Because it's got the best, to be completely mercenary, it's got the best price point. They're super portable. You don't need to buy extra sizes. You don't need to buy a 4XL book or an XS book. They're one size fits all. They're the perfect merchandise for a cartoonist.
I think the people who are going to read it in a book and the people who are going to read it online are not always, and almost never, the same audience. They're two different audiences. And there's probably, you know, the Venn diagram where there's like a bit of crossover, but I think that, you know, I will absolutely do a book when mine is finished. That was always the goal. And I don't expect, I mean, there are obviously people who read the comic so far that have, you know, said, when can I buy this? When can I get a print collection of it? And whatever, and they'll buy it. But I expect that most of the people who buy the book will have never, and maybe even never been aware that it was online, you know.
Actually, we had that happen with Butternut when we did a collection through a local company, and the book was available through just comic direct market stores. And I know Scott Kurtz experienced this with PvP as well when he went through Image. It's like, that audience doesn't read web comics, or like Cameron said, the majority doesn't. So we attracted a huge influx of new readers just by having that couple of floppies out there. And I know actually, I can't remember if it was a podcast or an article or a blog post by Scott Kurtz, but he was saying like he gradually saw his sales of the Image issues go down as people just began to migrate, who found it from the issues and, you know, over, and then they just buy the trades later.
a thing about the two audiences, something that was humbling for me, was I came from print comics, and I thought, like, I'm a big deal in print comics, and then so it'll translate to my webcomic, and absolutely.
Yeah. It's like two completely
people in webcomics had no idea who I was, and didn't care, and whatever.
I still love you, Cameron.
Oh, thank you. That's great. So yeah, they're two different audiences.
Yeah, that actually happened. I was like, Cameron Stewart's on my panel, and somebody said, who?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess you wouldn't know. So we've got 5 minutes left. Are there any other quick questions? There are lots of questions. I think you had your hand up first.
Yeah. I think Scott McCloud talks about this in Reinvent Comics, but he, and I know I'm pretty sure that he did at some point during his post-books career. The form of the web can sort of transcend the two-dimensional space of comics. Have any of you experimented with that? How do you feel about the implications of that? Do you ever plan on exploring that space?
Are you talking about stuff like, what's that?
Meredith just got a book deal with Random House, right? Yeah. So is that what you're talking about?
He's talking about using the web specifically for like unique properties and doing something online that you can't replicate. Yeah.
There was a comic by Drew Wang called Pop Contemplates the Inevitable Heat Death of the Universe. You mean kind of like that one?
Oh yeah.
Where it's just it's continually scrolling one that keeps scrolling.
I've never considered doing that for incredibly mercenary and short-sighted reasons, and that is because, like, you look at my comic, if you go over there, it is sepia-toned, and that's because I wasn't satisfied with the art in black and white, but I knew I would never be able to print it in color. It's not formatted widescreen for widescreen monitors because it's formatted like a book, because it was always going to be a book. And maybe one day when I don't have something that is going to, like, buy my groceries, so it needs to be in book format one day, and it needs to be in book format in a way that won't make me tear my hair out, I will try something like that. But I need, as terrible as it sounds, I need something that I can print up. So
I would say that even Scott McCloud has kind of admitted that the infinite canvas, the infinite possibilities we saw for webcomics is kind of an outdated state of mind. And it doesn't only come down to money. I mean, it also comes down to that, aside from that pub comic and When I'm King and a few really good examples of beautiful infinite canvas comics, it's kind of annoying to do all this scrolling and it strikes me as really innovative for the sake of being innovative without any substantial work behind it.
Yeah.
But I think that
the one thing we've done in Butternut a few times is add a soundtrack to a couple of comics, like actually embed an MP3 and have a song play during the comic. But
that's kind of annoying.
I know. Okay. But
you know who I see doing that? I see people doing that who are doing comics about wolves with glowing eyes. And there's like J-Rock.
That's coming up next time.
There's J-Rock playing over it.
But we have it where you can play yourself, so it doesn't like blast it right away. But we try to make them work without the music as well. So the music is an embellishment, so when it goes to print, it's still funny. Well, hopefully.
The most compelling example of what I think you're talking about is I saw a thing. Well, there's a comic by Dan Goldman called Red Light Properties, and there's a where clicking on the, like, he reveals dialogue like a balloon at a time by when you click on it, which I think you can do interesting things in controlling the pacing of the comic that you can't do in print. And I think he was taking that from, I can't remember if it was French or Chinese or something, but there was like a thing that was circulating a little while ago that was doing the same things. And I'm interested in that. I think that's actually really interesting. I am currently stuck in my print,
But even his page was actually still formatted to print.
No, absolutely. But with digital media becoming stronger and things like the iPad, which are going to, I don't think it's necessarily going to be, a print edition of a book that's going to be the be-all and end-all. I think you'd be able to sell your digital comics through iTunes or whatever. And I'm certainly interested in exploring that kind of stuff. And I think there will be people who are really clever with it and will do really interesting things.
Yeah.
I think that's all that we have time for.
Aww.
Sorry, guys. So thank you all for coming. Thank you.